Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Happy Monday to all that are following. We had a ho-hum 2-1 series victory this weekend. A lot to talk about, a lot to break down. Joining us tonight from the City of Angels, way out west, King Charles. How are we doing, Charlie Smith? Where can the fans find you?
Smith underscore MLB. I thought I'd have some fun after dealing with some technical difficulties. There's nothing kingly about this, especially my stature. Definitely not going to be there. But yeah, it's good for the Boston Red Sox. Really bad for the Boston Bruins, who had that game absolutely taken away from them by the refs. If you guys have not watched game four of that series game between the Bruins and the Panthers, shield your eyes, children. Definitely not a game you want to watch. Just awful.
Well, hopefully we'll keep things a little bit more positive. We'll keep it focused on the Sox, which is, I think, you know, a thing that it's been a little bit different in years past up in Boston. But also joining us on the pod tonight from the Grand Strand, aka Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing? And where can the fans find you on Twitter/X?
I am doing excellent. It is bike week down here in Myrtle Beach, which is not fun if you're just trying to not have loud motorcycles going constantly. But is what it is. I think there's like 500,000 Harley Davidsons here this week. So, and the city only has like 40,000 permanent residents. You have people that, you know, you have the summer tourists, I guess, and that can shoot it up quite a bit. But anyway, I can be found at Cushman MLB, podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Our rapidly growing Instagram account can be found. Just search for us on there. Our YouTube channel is grown, like really transformed over the last week, and will probably continue over the next couple weeks, but very active over there with a brand new crew. And yeah, that's about what we have going on.
Getting bigger and better on YouTube.
Yeah, a lot of activity to follow, a lot of places to come and interact with all of us, which is great. I can be found on Twitter/X at @TheCodyPaulson. And taking a quick look at the standings, we held serve from a week ago. We are still in third place, 5.5 games back from the Orioles, 5 games behind the Yankees, 1.5 up on the Rays, and 3 games up on the Blue Jays. But as we opened the show with, the Red Sox did take 2 out of 3 from the Nationals this weekend. So this will kick off, I guess, my favorite part of this segment, which is studs and duds. So, Charlie, why don't you kick it off with your stud for the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. So my stud for this one was Cooper Criswell, who, you know, on the last show I was talking about how I was really starting to begin to buy into this pitching program that Andrew Bailey has with the Boston Red Sox. Criswell came out, gave us 5 solid innings, struck out 9. I get it. It's not like he's striking out 9 Orioles or he's striking out 9 Dodgers, but you're still getting out almost 2 punchouts an inning. Allowed 2 runs on 3 hits. Both of those runs allowed came by way of a home run. Allowed 1 walk, and about 66% of his pitches went for strikes. So for somebody that's telling me that Criswell shouldn't be in the starting rotation at this point, you know, I think I said if there's someone that has to get pulled out, it's probably Criswell. If you keep doing 5 or 5+ innings of work and you strike out 9 guys or 8 guys or something like that, you found your replacement for Chris Sale. So that guy who we couldn't get 6-7 innings out of and was getting paid $30 million a year, Cooper Criswell's getting paid what? I don't even know how much he's getting paid this year. Someone's going to have to pull that one up. But to give you a little bit of an idea, I'm not nervous when Cooper Criswell is in there, and I'm content with what I've seen from him so far. You know, it's not always going to be pretty. He may not always, you know, strike out 8 or 9 guys. That's a season high for him so far, but he's gone 5 innings in 3 of the last 4 starts. He's allowed, outside of this game where he allowed 2 earned runs, he allowed 1 last game and then nothing the 2 before that. So you're starting to see, you know, the rotation figure itself out. This wasn't going to be a super easy weekend, or however you want to look at it, series. I didn't think it was going to be very difficult in relation to Atlanta, but you found your Chris Sale replacement right here. If he can give you five innings, strike out six or seven guys for $29 million less, you got your five starter. So I'm really content with what I've seen from him so far. If he can continue to do that and we can put three, four runs on the board, he should be getting a win probably 75% of the time. So Criswell, my stud.
Terry, what are your thoughts on Criswell?
Well, it's a little weird. I can't get his salary on.
I think it was like a flat million, or like a million and like 65,000, something very minimal, right, Charlie?
I didn't think it was even that. I can check SpoTrack, but usually Baseball Reference has that pretty readily accessible. But I think it could be.
I got it. $935,000 this year.
Okay. I was thinking
935 grand.
I was thinking under a million, but yeah, so that's, I mean, you're getting a 10 to 12 million dollar pitcher for less than a million.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And you're literally paying the Atlanta Braves $17 million to have Chris Sale not pitch in Boston. And I'm not going to say for one second that Chris Sale's replacement is Cooper Criswell. Like that, I'm not saying that that is your permanent replacement. What I'm saying is, if you can get that kind of performance, that's kind of like that Chris Sale-esque, you know, dog mentality. I'm going to try to strike out as many guys as possible. The issue is that you're not going to go long into games. So I'm curious, if he doesn't try to get the punch outs, do you have the ability of maybe six, seven strikeouts and you go six innings? Because you give us a quality start, that's just three innings of cleanup that we need from the rest of the guys. So, I mean, I'm not hating that. And, you know, I don't think any of us should be hating this, because he's, what, 26, 27 years old, and we're not even close to arbitration, I don't think. So, I mean, dude, ride this one until it's, you know, this pony's tired.
The crazy thing about that performance is the Nationals rank 23rd in strikeouts. So that's good. You want to be 30th on that list. So only a handful of teams below them. And Criswell struck out 9 against a team that just does not strike out a ton. So that's impressive, because honestly, I'm still waiting for the game where he lasts 2 1/3 and gives up 7. I'm still waiting for that, because he just doesn't top out. But for now, you have to ride the hot hand. Here's the crazy thing about this Red Sox rotation. They're number one in ERA. And they got a 2.75 ERA. And that's actually the whole staff. Let's see where the start.
While you're looking that up.
I got it
while
right.
While you're looking that up. Oh, you got it. Okay.
I do have it right here. So the Red Sox starting rotation has a 2.45 ERA. The Phillies are next. And gun to my head, who's going to win the World Series right now? It's the Phillies. That would be my surefire answer. I was thinking maybe the Braves, but the Phillies are just, man, off the charts right now. But anyway, they're second. Dodgers are third. No surprise there. But here we go again. 2.45 ERA leads the league for the Red Sox. Here's the crazy stat. Where do you think they rank in strikeouts?
Where do you think the Boston Red Sox rank in strikeouts?
Yeah, if they have the best ERA, where do you think they should be? And I'm talking pitching.
Yeah, two of them don't strike out anybody. I'm guessing probably 11th or 10th.
Okay. Cody, what's your guess?
I was going to say like 15 or 18th.
22nd. So 21 more starting rotations strike out more batters than the Red Sox. So that's why it's so hard to buy into this for me. Like, it's wonky and we're getting away with it. And I'm wondering if the book eventually does come out on it. I mean, Tanner Houck didn't really make the studs list, and he had a decent performance. 7 innings, you'll take that. 3 earned runs, but he only struck out 4. His strikeouts are coming down. And, you know, they're, you know, the other lineups are making contact. So with Cooper Criswell, I'm pleasantly surprised, but at the same time, how long can he, you know, go at this clip, Charlie?
I'm going to say that I didn't think it'd be that far down. I didn't think you said for 22nd.
Yeah.
So the teams that you expect to be higher up on the list, you know, Tampa Bay, they always have better starting pitchers.
10th.
They're 10th. Okay. Dodgers are up there. Guardians have been elite.
Actually, the Dodgers, believe it or not, are tied with the Brave. The Rays at 10th. And
yeah, Walker Buehler's coming back though. He's finally back, but he's like still working out the kinks. I just watched the Padres game today. Padres and Dodgers, and Yu Darvish is there, and he just pitched fantastically well. So I know they're doing great. The Phillies have like 3 aces in the hole, so they're probably number 1 or 2.
They're number one. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you have Aaron Nola, you got Wheeler, and then Ranger Suarez hasn't lost a game yet. He's 7-0, and he's got an ERA like 1.5 or 1.6 or something like that. I was just looking at his numbers. He's pitching out of his damn mind. So usually they say you need to have a minimum 2 really good starters to be relevant. They have 3 ace-type pitchers and then 2 that are – I don't even know the other 2, to be honest. I'm not even sure.
Nola and Wheeler, but
– No. Outside of Nola, Wheeler, and Suarez, who's 4 and 5? I don't even know. I'd have to look it up. But whoever it is, it doesn't even matter. Like, their team is that deep, and they're getting enough work done – it doesn't matter. You have 3. So if you can win 3 of 5 starts, you're set. So the Phillies are going to be, they're going to continue being a wagon. They have, you know, arguably, you know, a perennial all-star. You have Trey Turner there. You have, I mean, I know we're talking about pitching, so I don't want to go get off the snide there. Who are the top 3 though? Phillies,
Mariners and Yankees. Real okay, quick, a brilliant move by Dombrowski here, and it's worked out so far. Maybe it's a Cooper Criswell type experiment. Who knows? But one of their better starters so far, 1.53 ERA over 35 innings, 38 strikeouts, so he's striking out at least 1 per inning, a whip of 0.82. Former Detroit Tiger. Any guesses?
Former Detroit Tiger.
Very recent, busted prospect. They kind of lost hope in him.
Michael Fulmer?
Nope.
No, he's done for the... I don't think he's pitching. Hold on. Okay, Detroit... Oh my God, is it the guy that I... It's not Matthew Boyd.
Spencer Turnbull.
No way.
Just raking in that rotation. And then I'm not familiar with Christopher Sanchez, but he's made 7 starts.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
Dude, that's the guy who I said was last year. Is that who's in their rotation?
I believe so. I mean, he's made, look, yeah.
At his games, pitch. Look at his games towards the end of last year. That guy looks like he's going to be a star.
Well, so they got 5. They got some number ones and some number threes by the looks of it. That's the Philadelphia Phillies, but... But getting back to it, I want to raise this question. Garrett Whitlock is going to pitch a rehab start in Worcester this week. I don't know how you give Criswell's spot to Whitlock. You have to keep Criswell in there and ride that hot hand.
The absolute gross negligence of this team tells me that somebody like Criswell not only won't be in the rotation, could potentially just be another guy that gets optioned because we're not paying attention to what's working and what's not. Garrett Whitlock, I've said this before, and I'm going to try to say this calmly. Garrett Whitlock does not belong in your rotation. I think that's pretty good because deep down I want to scream expletive, expletive, expletive. Why the expletive are we putting him back in the rotation? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's like the Boston Red Sox just never heard of that expression before. Like, oh yeah, we're just going to keep tinkering. He doesn't belong in the rotation. He's not a starter. He's not. I'll stop talking.
Cody.
Boy, a lot to react to, a lot to unpack there. I think the biggest takeaway that I have for Cooper Creswell is how we're bringing him along in this starting rotation spot, right? They keep talking about wanting to getting stretched out, you know, wanting to extend his pitch count, have him go deeper into games, but they're making sure they're not putting too much on his plate or too much on his arm immediately, right? You know, when we first saw him, it was a couple innings, maybe three. Then it was four. Now we're getting to five. Hopefully we can get to six, maybe seven. If he continues to hum along, well, you know, the nine punch outs are great, sure, but this was an absolute find by the organization. And I think we have to give credit where credit's due in that capacity, because we've taken a lot of swings on dudes like this before and, you know, rightfully so, have had a lot of misses on dudes like this before, which, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit later. As it pertains to Whitlock, it boggles my mind that we continue to have this discussion and this conversation. You know, it'd be one thing if this was the rotation of last year or the year before, to where we had two to three guys maybe, and we were doing bullpen games every third to fourth day, and we just needed a body that could go out there and actually pitch five innings. I don't know if Whitlock can do that anymore, but we've got five guys right now. And it'd be another thing too if we didn't know where else we could put Whitlock, or we didn't know if he had success at any other stop along the way. But he could be a long reliever, he could be a multi-inning closer, he could be a great eighth inning or seventh inning setup man. Like, he has had so much success at the back end of the bullpen getting guys out that I feel like we're just outside yelling at clouds trying to tell the Red Sox to utilize Whitlock differently than he's being utilized currently. And it's not like he's getting paid starter money. It's not like we're allocating resources to the extent that we need to be getting more from him, because at this moment in time, we're allocating the resources that we are to him and getting nothing in return. So, like, wouldn't you rather have your 50 or 60, maybe 70 innings, knowing that he's going to be healthy and dominant and, you know, be able to tick up that velocity a couple more miles per hour, as opposed to getting maybe 100 innings here and there with no sort of rhythm? It's just, you know, a couple of starts here, injured list, a couple of starts here, injured list. And so, you know, tip of the cap to Creswell for taking every opportunity that is given in front of him, getting the guys out. You know, if it lines up that he gets the softer teams, you still got to get those outs, right? Those 15 outs that he recorded, nine by strikeout, still have to be ascertained one way or the other. And I think he's a very deserving stud for the weekend.
So really quick on Whitlock, his first three appearances of the 2022 season, he debuted with the Red Sox in 2021 as a Rule 5 guy, strictly pitched out of the bullpen. Never made a start that year. 2022, first three appearances, first four appearances of the year in April out of the pen. Makes his first start on April 23rd. Makes nine starts, with the last one being on June 7th, and he's injured. I forget what the injury was, but he doesn't come back until July 15th, which is my birthday, by the way. Was it a happy one? Ooh, he only lasted two innings. So no. In fact, was that even a start?
A leg injury covering first base or something like that. Like, it was something weird.
He didn't even start, actually. So he never started again after that seven game stretch. Only made it seven consecutive games as a starter, and then they didn't start him again. So that's all he managed to do in 2022. 2023, he makes three starts in April, gets hurt on following the April 22nd game. You don't see him again until May 27th, so about 5 weeks. Then He makes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 starts after coming back, and then he misses a month and a half. After July 2nd, you don't see him again until August 13th. So he can't seem to go more than, you know, 7 or 8 starts until they break him. So why are we doing this? Why is it going to be different? It's already not different in 2024. I mean, he's just missed a ton of time. So don't mess with it. Cooper Criswell, I mean, he hasn't had many extended runs in the big leagues, you know, just here and there. He's kind of been a bit of a journeyman. Ride the hot hand. Ride the hot hand. And you option Whitlock, Winkowski, to bring up Bayo, and he's going back to Worcester as a starter. They're going to work on some things. And if they could add a pitch to him, who knows? Maybe he comes up and gives you a nice run of quality starts. But this Whitlock thing, it's nothing but pain for us to watch, and it's literally pain for him, you know? So stop messing with it. Stop breaking him. And here's another thing. Let me go back to it here. 2021, he pitches 73 innings. And again, that was strictly relief. The most he's pitched was actually 2022, 78 innings. So he almost pitched the most innings of his career as a big leaguer in the season where he was strictly a reliever. Why are we messing with that? And we've been screaming this off the mountaintops since probably 2 winters ago. And unlike then, like when Whitlock kept coming back to the rotation, we really didn't have a solution. Like there was no other better option. We knew he was going to get hurt, but the next option was worse. I'd rather see Criswell. And quite frankly, I'd rather see Winkowski over him anyway. Winkowski was giving you quality starts, going 4, 5, 6 innings, giving you a chance to win. Whitlock, yeah, he might give you a few good ones, but then he's going to be useless when he goes back on the injured list for 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm not a Criswell guy in general, but I'm much more of a Criswell guy than I am a Whitlock guy.
I mean, we just can't ignore what the history has been for Whitlock and what Criswell continues to do, right? You know, you got to play the cards that are in front of you. And as you mentioned, Gary, ride the hot hand, right? And yeah, anyways, let's get back on schedule here. Let's talk about some other positive things. Terry, who is your stud for the evening?
My stud is going to be Chris Martin. And yeah, you could go with a couple other guys over him, but he had a terrible start to the year, but has really figured it out. He did get slapped around against the Cubs, so don't get me wrong. That was definitely a bit of a blip there. But for the most part, very quietly, He's got his earned run average down to 4.11 after being 7-something. So that's going the right way. Kenley's also going the right way, by the way, but I'm still mad because I'm annoyed with his attitude, you know, the first few weeks of the season and the constant complaining. But I'm just grabbing his full game log here. So other than the Cubs outing, which again, they slapped him around for 3 earned runs over 1 1/3. Not great, but aside from that, he's been scoreless in every other outing going back to April 16th. So basically a month. And actually, no, I get that wrong. Since April 10th, that was the last time he gave up any runs. So let's see. This is only once in his last 8 appearances has he given up anything. So very quietly, you're kind of returning to that 8th and 9th inning stability there. And then, you know, the other relievers are holding it down. I mean, I know Slayton had a bit of a blip a couple appearances ago, but you know, he had one decent appearance in the series. Bernardino has continued exactly what he did last season, pulling him off the Mariner scrap heap. So you're really, as good as your rotation has been, your bullpen's getting there too. And a big part of that is Chris Martin. So we'll see. I mean, we don't know what the strategy is going to be like at the end of July. Are we buyers or are we sellers? But if you're sellers, you got some chips. You can cash in a little bit if some of these guys continue to hold up.
Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, not much more to add. He's had two blips on the whole season, one against Baltimore, one against Chicago. And both the Cubs and the Orioles were teams that we picked to be division leaders and division winners during the preseason episode. So you look at some of the other games, you know, some of us picked Atlanta to be a leader. Some of us picked the Cleveland Guardians to be a leader. You know, I picked the Pittsburgh Pirates, silly, as a wild card spot. He's doing really, really well against some of these other teams. So I just want to call it like a blip. The walk numbers are down. The strikeout numbers are surprisingly even per inning. So he's striking out one an inning on the average, which is better than he did last year. So that's kind of cool. ERA is obviously inflated because of two bad appearances. That's it. I really do believe that, you know, Chris Martin did not forget how to just pitch. And I think there might have been a little bit of a reverting back to, you know, what was working beforehand because he's had four straight appearances now where he hasn't allowed a hit. So, you know, no hits, no walks, four innings, four appearances. Your ERA has dropped from 5.56 to, God, I don't know, 4.4, maybe a little lower, 4.11. So it's only going to continue going down that direction if Martin continues to pitch the way that we know he can.
I feel like the expectations on Martin, too, were a little bit difficult for him to live up to, right? He was on such an insane run from the end of last year into the beginning of this year to the point where I think he was setting records for a number of consecutive scoreless appearances. The dude was just automatic lights out, like Dylan Betances type style in the eighth inning. And, you know, we utilized him in the ninth when Kenley was down. Anytime you needed three outs, Martin was going to get them for you. And, you know, like you guys mentioned, he had two bad outings. It really inflated some of his peripheral numbers and, you know, some of the bigger ones that we pay attention to. But I will say it hasn't really looked the same from the beginning of the season. You know, he velocity might have been down. He wasn't locating. He just wasn't sharp. And I think that's the thing that we've noticed with his, you know, most recent stretch of good outings is he just appears to be sharper on the mound. He's got more of an attack plan. He's able to locate his pitches. You know, you can see him setting up batters and being able to either get weak contact or, you know, get that punch out. Another thing that we should comment on is the stellar defensive play that he made. You know, a little bit of a look what I found kind of situation, but and that ball was hit on the screws right at him. And to keep your composure, all 6-8 of that frame to kind of fold it up and still make that catch. It's just been great to see Chris Martin kind of get back to the form that he could be, essentially. And, you know, as his bullpen shores up, you know, the pitching aspect of this entire team continues to look better and better and better. And as a point of weakness in the offseason, it has been very refreshing to know that, hey, we're going to be in games, right? You know, it's not going to be, hey, we need to get out and score 8 runs to have a chance to win this one. We've got an opportunity, you know, if we can put up 4 runs, 5 runs, to really do well. I forget what year it was, but the Red Sox, it probably was 2018. Like when they scored 4 or more runs, they had an absolutely insane record. And, you know, I think we're going to look back on this season as maybe one of those where if we score more than 4, we're going to be doing pretty well in a lot of games. Yeah, Terry.
So only 2 walks on the entire season, as Charlie was alluding to. He did have a bit of a shoulder thing that they seem to be concerned about. So he's only made 4 appearances the month of May. But in all 4 of those appearances, he's not given up a hit. He's not given up a walk. And in all but one of them, you know, has struck out at least 1 per inning. So he's made some adjustments clearly over the last few weeks. And we also have to remember he didn't have much of a spring training because he was hurt for part of that. So you look at the whole month of April, he made 11 appearances, and in only two of them did he not give up a hit. So in 9 out of 11, he gave up at least one hit, and on several occasions, it was actually multiple hits. So clearly, there's been an adjustment made, and he's kind of back on 2023 form, at least for now. So we'll see. But I figured I'd go with him because I don't think the bullpen's been getting enough love on some of these shows.
Morton included, he, you know, as somebody that has been going well recently and definitely is deserving of being on the studs list. Charlie, was there anything else that you wanted to mention about Chris Martin? Alrighty, then we will move it on to the final stud of the segment. This will be, oh, Terry's got something to add.
Now we got to do honorable mentions. You know, there's a bunch we can cover just super briefly. Brian Bayo today in the finale. Am I missing something? What's going on?
No. I mean, just I'm going to go after you because I had two that I wanted to talk about as well.
Okay. I'll probably cover them and then we can get into a couple of them. But Bayo, after, unlike Nick Pivetta, I mean, much like Nick Pivetta, was trash in his rehab start. Did not look good. Bad command. The only upside to both of them was they came out of it with no, you know, ill effects. They were healthy. I will say this, I mean, big difference between the Nationals and the Braves. So perhaps Bayo had a more of a cupcake start, but he made the most of it. Only struck out one, but got through five innings and kind of kept that Nationals lineup at bay. I covered Martin, and Jansen was actually junk in the first game. He pitched all three, was very good in the second and third outing. So I'll give Jansen credit for that. All the games were close, so, you know. And then, you know, Slayton, Bernardino, still pretty good. Devers took a lot of crap for the previous series, striking out in a couple of big spots. He had a monster spot late in game two that drove in a couple of runs. For some reason, they decided to walk Tyler O'Neill. And they're like, yeah, let's walk O'Neill to face Rafi. And that didn't work out too well. Rafaela, not super great, 2-for-9, but still removing himself from the automatic out category. And Ref Snyder, 2-for-8. And yeah. Oh, I know what we skipped. We skipped Cody's stud. I just got to him here and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I thought you were transitioning us over to duds. My bad. So who could be left?
All good, right? Yeah. By process of elimination, we'll keep it simple. We'll keep it sweet here. Just wanted to give some love to my guy, Connor Wong. You know, behind the dish, two caught stealings on the day. You know, the 2-for-7 is whatever. The one RBI, a walk, a strikeout. We don't need to necessarily pay attention to the offensive metrics. What he's been able to do behind the plate has been absolutely huge. And on a day in which Kenley was not going well, Terry, as you mentioned, went 3 days straight, was throwing upper 80s. The velocity was down. To get those additional outs on the base paths in a positive manner, I think goes a long way. This team was scuffling off a pretty brutal road trip. Didn't look super great in the homestand. This game was kind of hanging in the balance. You get a runner in scoring position. Kenley's not throwing the ball well, and to be able to eliminate that, I think is huge for, you know, the overall appearance of this team. Right, you lose today's game, you go to 500, you lose a series to the Nationals at home. Looks very different than being able to say, hey, we took 2 out of 3, we're building on something, and Connor Wong was a huge part of that. The guy's still batting close to, you know, 350 on the year, which is absurd offensive production out of the catcher spot. It's absurd offensive production to begin with, let alone as a catcher. But Charlie, what are your thoughts on Connor Wong?
Well, pretty sweet when you end a game by throwing somebody out who's actually really, really quick. That's no, oh yeah, we're just going to see if he can steal base. The guy's been really, really quick. So, I mean, game ender on that, that's that's one of those things you can't do. You cannot end a game trying to steal a base. So on the Nationals' part, big whoopsie there. But to Connor Wong, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo it. You know, 2 for 4 in the first game, did have an error in that one, but it more than made up for that error by ending the game with an absolute cannon throw. Kind of went a little south. It went, you know, down and back up, but it was a perfect tag. And I mean, there was no question. He thought he was safe, but upon further review, like I didn't think so. I thought it was over. Literally, that was it. I'm really happy with what we've seen from Wong. He's continued to grow, and you know, I'm for the first time in a long time not really that concerned about the catching position. So I'm just really excited to see the direction that Connor Wong can go, and you know, we have an exciting young talent in the wings coming up too.
Terry.
So the interesting thing there, that was a very fascinating ninth inning because Kenley gives up the one hit, and I think it was with two outs. I could be wrong, but it was a ball up the gap by Nick Senzel. And then they pinch run him. I already forget the name of the pinch runner, but I've been watching the away team's broadcast. I don't know if I've said that on the early week yet. I've done that. This is like my fourth series in a row, just watching the away teams. And, you know, they said that, you know, the pinch runner is known for a lot of speed, and Kenley likes to delay, you know, the pitch in his windup, you know, to mess with the timing. And he wasn't able to do that, you know, obviously, because if he's doing that, the runner's going to get a hell of a jump. So Kenley had to shorten up his delivery there. But the fascinating thing was, they seemed to think he was going to go right away. And what Kenley did was he left the ball elevated high in the strike zone. So Wong just simply stood up as it was coming in and was all ready, you know, to basically, you know, gun him down at second base. So it was a perfectly executed, you know, not a pickoff, but, you know, they gunned him down. And it ended the game. Like, they were ready for it, and it worked perfectly. So we'll see, but it's just, if Kenley gets a base runner, if the runner has speed or they got someone on the bench that does, it's going to make for an interesting later part of the inning, because that was a one-run game, and the Red Sox were fortunate in the Zach Kelly inning. They had runners on second and third, so the go-ahead run was actually on second. So everything broke right for the Red Sox. And we didn't mention, I almost made this guy my stud, Victor Robles, because he basically won the game for the Red Sox. Dropped a routine pop-up. I think he was trying to transfer it right away to get the ball to third to try to hold the runners, but the runners were never going to go. It was too shallow, and the ball pops out, you know, before he actually catches it, and that led to the inning dragging on. Then Rafaela hit a ground rule double, which brought in two of their three runs. So, and then Victor Robles later on in an inning where the Nationals had tons of momentum, they held up the third base runner. Robles was on second and took off for third with the runner already on third. And our former co-host Micah Storms had a hilarious tweet. He said Robles has money on this game, you know, insisting that he might have bet on the Red Sox, and you know. So it was a terrible game for Robles, and again, fascinating ninth inning, the way Kenley and Wong executed that final out to gun down the base runner and end the game.
Indeed. And, you know, with Kenley and Wong, you know, being able to hold a team that does run often and run well, I think is another feather in the cap for the two of them. But are there any other honorable mentions, Charlie? Covered?
Yeah, so I mean, Bernardino, you just briefly touched up on him, and I think we need to give him his due diligence. You know, 2 1/3 innings in the series, struck out a pair. his strikeout percentage in those two appearances was over 72%. It was almost 73. So 3 or 4 pitches on average are going for strikes. 12 straight appearances without allowing an earned run for Bernardino. So I really think that for those that haven't quite bought in, Terry, for those that haven't quite bought into the pitching program, Andrew, for, you know, the Andrew Bailey's got, Terry, that, you know, we're starting to see that both the bullpen and the starting rotation, you know, light up Christmas trees in the month of May. So we've not had this. Like, I don't remember a time where we had a starting rotation and a bullpen that was this locked down, where you have guys that have sub-1 ERAs or sub-1.5 ERAs, but not just 1, 2, 3, 4 guys. So this is a special situation. And the only thing that's going through my mind is, man, what if the Boston Red Sox had done whatever they could to get Teoscar Hernandez here? Just imagine where the Red Sox would be right now. I think we have 5 or 6 more wins. I'll leave it on that.
We didn't really target any infielders, did we?
Everybody that we did target, serious or not serious, regardless, expressed zero interest of wanting to come to Boston because they didn't see the Red Sox spending a lot of money. You know, Teoscar was given a 2-year deal, I believe, but he took a 1-year, I think it was $23.5 or $22.5 million deal with the Dodgers, and it was deferred. Like, for the Dodgers did something crazy where they deferred basically, you know, $1 billion worth of salary. But everyone's buying in because you have a guy like Teoscar Hernandez that actually bought into the program. Like, the Dodgers make players better. And I don't think anyone thought that Teoscar Hernandez was going to be, you know, second in the league in home runs, second in the league in RBIs this part of the season. We know the strikeouts are bad. We know the batting average isn't crazy. You know, it ain't great. But when you have 11 or 12 dingers on the year and you're second in RBIs on the season, and it's, you know, mid-May, almost mid-May, you're a sure bet to be in that 100 to 120 RBI range. You're probably going to hit 30 to 40 home runs, and you're going to ensure that you get a crazy payday.
He's actually having a very good season, I would say.
He's having a great season.
258 doesn't sound great, but his on base is 66 points above that. His OPS is at 134 plus. So league average, I think, is 100, isn't it, for OPS plus? So he's hitting well above that. How are the strikeouts? Because that has been a big problem for him. Ooh,
yes,
he's bad. 51 strikeouts.
Yeah. So the strikeout thing.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
We talked about it.
Yeah, no, that
is
correct.
52 strikeouts. Yeah, it's about, you know, a little less than 1 out of 3 so far in the season. But so far this month, he's got 7 strikeouts and 33 at-bats. He's hitting .273 with 5 dingers. He had a grand slam against the Padres and with 1 swing won the game. He had a home run and 3 RBIs against the Marlins, won the game. It was a 2-run homer, and then I think it was an RBI single in the other one. But he's just like, he just gets it. And honestly, like, these are the types of players that, you know, when the Red Sox were in on him, there's a reason why we all wanted Teo. Like, the guy is a star. I would get a Teoscar Hernandez jersey. I mean, if he signed a long-term deal, I would get it. The guy's a star. He's great. The problem is he's 31 years old, so who knows how many years he's actually going to be playing for.
Well, it was a short deal. I mean, he only signed a one-year deal. Yeah.
Right.
The guy I wanted had a hot April, but he seems to have cooled off. Lourdes Gurriel. He's hitting just .245 with a .282 on base, 5 dingers. So I'm trending wrong towards him, barring a turnaround. And he could, but Teoscar has been... everything is advertised, really, for the Dodgers.
To quote you, Terry, off the charts.
Off the charts.
He's been doing it. He's been doing what he was paid to do. I think that's pretty much it, because, you know, Bayo just came back a little rusty. Jansen struck out the side, but still allowed a couple of runs. And Devers could go in either column. You could put him in the stud category or the dud category. He had 11 at-bats. He struck out 5 times, but he still had 2 really vital RBIs in the series. So
had the biggest at-bat of the series, though. I would say,
yeah,
late in the game. That's another thing too, before we move on. Well, this might be a thing to say on the dud side, but we won the series, which is good, but we didn't offensively break out. I mean, you only score a run in the first game. You score 4 in game two, and then three of your runs today, at least two of them were due to like the worst offense I've ever defense I've ever seen. So not a ton of runs there, but we got Tampa coming up. I glanced at that series and checked some numbers, but we'll get into that in the next show.
All righty, moving on to the duds then. Charlie, who was your dud for the weekend?
So my dud for the weekend on this one, sadly, because, you know, we're talking about Chris Sale earlier, is the part, you know, to the puzzle that we got in that trade. So Vaughn Grissom went 2-for-12 in the series, struck out three times, couple of singles, had a, you know, I think he had a run scored in game three, but just, you know, not getting it done. No bat flip this series, so that was nice, but sad because it would have been nice to get a home run. You know, they're, it's like feast or famine here in Boston, and the Red Sox, again, just, I think, one home run in the series. That's it. So, Vaughn Grissom, you're not helping yourself. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's hitting like $160. I'd have to look. 120, even worse. So, let me see if it went up after this. 138, excuse me, after game three. So, he needs to do better. He needs to be better. We're depending on him. We have way too many glaring holes. And sadly, as bad as 2-for-12 was, that wasn't even the worst problem in this series. So, Vaughn Grissom, 2-for-12, my dud.
Terry.
I'm not extremely discouraged yet. I mean, has he created a spark and made an immediate impact like we've seen some players in the past? No, he hasn't. But he didn't have a normal spring training. He's more than holding his own defensively, which was the biggest concern coming into the year. So not concerned there. The strikeouts aren't really a big problem. He's striking out once per game. On the flip side, he's not walking at all. So we need to see that. I've been saying all season, if your walks are up, typically everything else will go up. So, you know, I don't know that the Tampa staff is going to be where he figures that out, but hopefully he'll just have some scrappy at-bats. I mean, Rafaela took a little bit of time to get going. So did Abreu, the latter of which has really, you know, been productive offensively and defensively. Abreu's been phenomenal. We didn't cover him in the honorable mentions, but was 2-for-5 with a home run on Saturday. Got the first run on the board. I think he's got 3 on the year now. But still, you know, we'll see. I'm not overly concerned about Grissom. And the biggest problem with the infield in the first 4 or 5 weeks was defense. And he's continued, you know, holding his own and shoring that up, mostly with Rafaela on the other side of him. Romy Gonzalez did, I think, start a couple of games at short. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm rooting for the kid. And I think once that bat gets going, I think he's going to be productive.
I think you guys put it great by saying, we'll see, right? You know, the whole hasn't had a traditional spring training, had to come back from an injury, then got sick. You know, you're on the road a lot. Like, there has been no sense of normalcy. There's been no sense of consistency for him at this moment in time. For him to be able to be a plug and play second baseman, not have, you know, just booted ground ball after booted ground ball or throwing into the stands, I think is really the biggest thing that we're looking for, right? Because the bat is going to come around. We've seen it at the major league level already. We've seen him put together some good at bats and have some good hits. It's just, you know, he's got to get adjusted to the speed of major league pitching, the timing, the whole nine. And, you know, you can do a microwave warm up or a microwave rehab start, but that doesn't necessarily, very rarely do guys do their rehab start and come in clicking, especially, you know, at the beginning of their career. So while it is definitely a concerning trend to pay attention to and definitely, you know, a deserving candidate to be on the duds list, I don't think it's necessarily time to press that panic button. Terry, who was your dud for the weekend?
My dud for the weekend. Brace yourself, Charlie. Charlie just told me I was number one. So my dud will have to be Tyler O'Neill, who was by far, well, actually one person was worse and he's next actually, but by far, I would even say O'Neill was worse. Struck out 7 times in 11 at bats, did draw 2 walks, but this is a guy who is slumping now, bad slump. And he's a middle of the order bat. I mean, he shouldn't be, but he is by default on this staff. So I think he's regressing to the mean, as Jason would say. Regressing to the mean is a big Jason-ism on this podcast. But the home runs have disappeared. By the way, how many home runs do you think the Red Sox have in all of May?
3.
It is 3.
And it was 2 last time we talked.
Okay. You know? So it's 3 thanks to Abreu on Saturday. But yep, the Red Sox were leading MLB in home runs like in the 3rd week of April. By the end of the month, they had slipped down to like 4th or 5th. But we are dead last in Major League Baseball right now with home runs. And we've got 3. The next closest team has 7. So the 29th ranked team more than doubles you. So we've had a big evaporation of home runs. And, you know, Dave O'Brien is always like, well, you know, if this was July, that'd be out of here. Well, the balls are going out in other parks with other lineups. So, Charlie?
Are we saying dead last for the month of May?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I was about to say, because in the season, we tore the cover off the ball. We're probably now in the middle. I'm guessing 15-16-ish.
I'm guessing.
Let me see.
I think we're lower than that. I think we're in the 20s. Stats.
Sucks.
Team. I'm going to beat you, Charlie.
I see 18. Did you see that?
Oh, 18th. Okay. Yeah. I thought we were 22nd, 23rd.
I figured halfway down. I mean, 3 home runs is not going to get it done. There are some teams that get 3 homers in a game. You know, like the Yankees now, they're starting to find Jesus. And you're starting to see Volpe launch them. Soto's launching them. Verdugo is hitting home runs. And then, you know, so is Judge. So the Yankees, I'm sure, in the month of May, probably 1 or 2. Let's see if I can find that by month.
So the Red Sox are 23rd in the month of May for batting average. Let's check strikeouts, because that's a terrible problem for us. 3rd in all of MLB in terms of strikeouts. I don't know. We know we're last in home runs. Let's check runs batted in. We are, 28th. And runs batted in the month of May.
A tale of 2 months, feast and famine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also throw into the fact that you have arguably the worst fielding in baseball too. Like the errors that we've committed this year are just so bad. We're probably number 1 or 2 in errors too.
I don't know how to look that up. Expanded.
Are you on MLB reference? What page are you looking at?
No, I was just on the general MLB page.
Got it.
But, you know, I'm surprised we've won a couple series this month based on being last in home runs, 3rd to last in runs driven in, and what did I say, 26th or 27th in average? So it's terrible. And, you know, Vaughn Grissom hopefully can heat up, and Tyler O'Neill just needs to figure it out. But I think this is somewhat who he is. In 2021, the one season he was good, And I think he was in the National League somewhere in the top 10 in the MVP voting by the end of the year, still ranked 12th in MLB in strikeouts. So it's been a problem for him. Not saying he's Joey Gallo. I'm just saying he's Tyler O'Neill.
Charlie, your thoughts on Tyler O'Neill?
Well, when you strike out 7 times in 11 at-bats and you go 143 for the entire month of May with a single RBI and you have 18 total strikeouts and 35 at-bats, it hurts. And here's the thing. I love me Tyler O'Neill. Everybody knows it. I've been a huge supporter of him. I'm not giving up on him just yet. I really do think he has it, but we're also forgetting he wasn't the same when he came back from that nasty hit. Like, that concussion really jacked him up. So if you look back at it, he's only had a couple of home runs since, 4 or 5 RBIs, that's it. And we've gone, 7 games now? And in his last, 11 games, he has 1 RBI and 3-4 runs scored. So that's not going to get it done. The sombreros are really disappointing. Like, that's his 3rd and 4th sombrero. That's 3 strikeouts for those that are, painting in the lines here for the month of May. That's not going to get it done. In relation to April, he didn't strike out 3 times in any game. So that mixed in with March, only struck out once in that entire month. So, I'm a little alarmed. I'm not sure if I'm going to raise the bell yet. The strikeout numbers are, something that is part of his game, but it's not this much a part of the game. So he's striking out a lot more frequently than he had last year. But if he doesn't start to hit more home runs soon and get on base a little bit more frequently, this is going to look really, really scary. It's already looking pretty bad. 40 strikeouts and 110 at-bats is not a pretty percentage. That's 36%. So more than 1 out of 3 at-bats. So this one hurts, and Terry, I'm sure, loves sticking the needle in me for this one, but I have to wear it. Unfortunately, Tyler O'Neill not doing so great.
We always knew that this was the other end or the other shoe that could drop with a Tyler O'Neill performance, right? As hot as he was in March and April, we knew that this was a potential outcome for his performance, right? Because otherwise he wouldn't be signing, A, in Boston, or B, on team-friendly deals. Concussion recovery is not linear. It has been well-documented across multiple different sports, so maybe there are still some lingering effects from that collision, because it was probably one of the worst ones we've seen in a while. Baseball, for all intent and purposes, is not a contact sport, let alone an unprotected head-to-head hit either. And so, whether it be the concussion, whether it be, it's just a bad stretch, or some better pitching competition or whatever it is, but hopefully we can get him going again, just in some capacity. We got some series coming up that has an opportunity for him to kind of get hot, get right, and we'll hope that he'll turn it on from there. Terry, was there something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just want to grab one more game here, which I'm doing right now. This is in regards to Devers. So he's got O'Neill hitting in front of him all the time, basically. Except for the last game I was trying to find. Devers actually hit 2nd in that game. So 5 games ago, he had Duran hitting in front of him, O'Neill hitting behind him. Then in the next 4 games, he's got O'Neill hitting in front of him. And these are the guys over those 4 games who are hitting 5th. Grissom, Wong. That's who's protecting Rafi Devers. So when you're looking at those low offensive numbers, last in home runs, 3rd to last in RBIs, I mean, you don't even have a heart of the order here to put in there with Devers. Bogarts and Martinez are long gone. And those guys are hard to replace, but I mean, there were some options out there. We mentioned Teoscar, but it's just, you wonder why you're floundering. And some people will say, well, Wong's hitting 360 right now, and he's a decent guy to put behind Devers. And I think he probably is the best guy to put behind him. But are these opposing pitching staffs thinking, oh my God, Connor Wong is after Rafi Devers? Are they really afraid of Connor Wong? Not really. So that's not going to – Devers is still going to have crap to hit, basically. And, yeah, so this is a very offensively flawed team.
It was on life support to begin the season, and then obviously the amount of injuries that this team has endured has made it even more difficult. You know, it is very lefty heavy, as we have covered, a lot of replacement level players as well, which do not bode well for the course of a 162 game season. Any other tidbits or notes that we would like to add on O'Neill?
He still sucks.
All righty. Well, then we will get to the last dud of the segment. This is my dud, which is Dom Smith, over 5 for 2 Ks, 2 pinch hit performances, and a full game. He's a major league journeyman. You know, he's kind of stuck around, was a high draft pick way back when, just hasn't really managed to catch on anywhere. I know that we were, I don't want to say excited when Dom Smith was signed, but we were like, hey, at least we're signing major league players, right? Like, this is a step up as opposed to just signing a prospect or somebody that had a bunch of options in a AAA team. And so, you know, we were at least doing the right moves, and he just hasn't caught on here in Boston, which is what it is, right? It's not for everybody. This maybe isn't his, you know, his place to be. This could be his last stop. We're not really sure. But with performances like this, and then performances by, you know, Nico Cavadas in AAA, his time on the team could be, you know, numbered, right? The guy's got 9 bombs, 23 RBIs in AAA. He's hitting at a ridiculous clip. He continues to get better year over year. This could be somebody that we could see late season call up, or, you know, if Dom continues to not contribute offensively, maybe a little bit earlier. But it is just exciting to have some sort of roster flexibility prospects in AAA to be looking at that are outside of the big three. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, 0 for 5, couple pinch hit performances, 0 for 3 in the middle game with 2 strikeouts. You know, his best career year was the COVID year. So if you look at his numbers from 2020, he was off. Like, he would have probably had 30 homers on the average, close to 100 RBIs. But the problem is, it's just not here. It's just not the place for him. So unfortunately, yeah, his time is numbered here. And, you know, I wish him well wherever he ends up going, but it's just not, this ain't it. You know, sad, but this just can't be acceptable.
Carrot.
I call him a scrap heap guy. You know, we got him for basically nothing, and we haven't really done a great job this year finding guys that could come in and really create a spark. This wasn't a terrible series for those types of players. I probably should have mentioned Garrett Cooper in the honorable mentions. He played 2 out of the 3 games, drove in a run, actually the only run on Friday, and then was 2 for 3 today in the finale. So he's finally starting to make contact and put it in play, but he has not had a good start so far, hitting 192. And then you've got Romy Gonzalez actually hitting 286. That surprises me. He was 2 for 6 this series, but only 14 at bats, I guess. But and then of course Dom Smith hitting 160 with a 192 on base. I mean, we're just not getting the 6 through 9 spots in our order are just, you're not getting much. And we already talked about, you know, O'Neill in the upper part and Devers slumping because he's not surrounded by, you know, other threats that can either he can drive in or they can drive him in. So And they've moved Devers around the order. I mean, he's been batting second. He's been batting fourth. So, and then getting back to Dom Smith, he's not going to be here long. I don't know how long Casas is out, but we do have a prospect, though, in Worcester, don't we? Nico, I forget what his name is. I can pull it up. I thought you guys had it already.
Yeah. He was the guy that hit 9 home runs, 23 RBIs, the guy that I was saying. The better he does in AAA, the shorter Dom's time, I think, on the team gets.
I don't know why you don't just take a chance, because, I mean, remember when Travis Shaw got called up? The expectations weren't very high for him, but he had decent numbers down there, and he, you know, he came up and made an impact in the short amount of time we had him. But yeah, Nico Cavadas. So I talked about him. This was before we got Cooper. So this was a few weeks ago. I was just looking at the minor league depth, and I don't think Cavadas is on the 40 man. So you'd have to obviously DFA someone. That would probably be Smith, I'm assuming. But in 94 at bats, he's got 30 hits, 9 dingers, 23 runs batted in. He's struck out 34 times, so about a third of the time. That's a little high, but I mean, at the same time, he can probably be a little bit more productive than a guy like Dom Smith. Bobby Dalbec, by the way, isn't finding it down there. Hitting 175 with a 267. Has hit 3 dingers, and they were all solos because he has 3 runs batted in. So,
and Smith and Nico are both left-handed bats too. So it's not like you're subbing out a right-handed major league bat for a left-handed AAA bat. So, you know, that isn't something that you could use as a reason to keep him in AAA, to say the least. Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to mention on Dom Smith? If not, we'll kick it over to Terry for some unfortunate dishonorable mentions.
You know, there really wasn't many. Let's see. Hamilton was 0-for-3 in the middle game of the series. I'm not sure why he's really up here, especially when you have Rafaela. I mean, you've got Grissom, Rafaela, and Romy Gonzalez to hold down that middle infield. I'd find another outfielder, or perhaps upgrade first base like we were just talking about. But really, the pitching was pretty solid all the way through. I mean, the only blip was, as I mentioned earlier, Kenley Jansen in game one gave up 2 earned. It was 3-1, so it was 5-1 after. So he basically put the game out of reach for the Red Sox. Well, Zach Kelly was a little wild today. I don't want to kill the guy, but walked one, then hit another with a hit by pitch. I couldn't tell if it hit his shoulder or his actual helmet, or maybe both actually, but very fortunate it wasn't flush to the helmet anyway. And that inning could have got away. I mean, the runners were on second and third, granted with 2 outs, but that's really it. You know, it was just a lot of mediocre offense throughout the series, but it worked out. I mean, we hit just well enough to nip them. They were a mess due to one player, Victor Robles, and the starting pitching was pretty good. Right across the board.
Just a ho-hum weekend of baseball. And thankfully, we were on the right side of it. Charlie, was there anything else that you wanted to add? Nope. Then we will wrap there for this episode. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great day and take care.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.